Hey guys, on this week's episode of Philadelphia Film Friends podcast, we have John Newman. He is a documentarian as well as an aspiring TV director and camera operator on television and movies. He is from Philadelphia, an avid Beatles fan, and a good friend. So sit back and enjoy another episode of the Philadelphia Film Friends podcast where you get to learn everything about John Newman.
You were assistant directing that, and I think I worked on a few sets with you where you were doing sound as well. So one of those, I lose track with all the films that we worked on, but like definitely through that.
Yeah, I think it was Temple Smash, my sophomore year, your freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you were doing camera freshman year.
I initially started doing Smash, doing camera for Smash, which was like amazing, and I really loved it.
So cool.
And it gave me an opportunity to like see a lot of the people and like interact with them, not so much like befriend them. So like people wouldn't really see me all that much because I was behind. They're like, "Oh, you work for Smash? Oh, you do camera, right? Yeah." Because I was kind of hidden,
laying low.
I knew everybody, yeah. So like I knew everybody, but they didn't necessarily know who I was at first.
Right. I think that's where we met. But then, you were given the opportunity this year in the fall to direct.
Yeah, that was probably the highlight of my college career because when I started Smash, I was like, this is where I want to be. And I was like, maybe one day, maybe when I'm a junior or a senior, hopefully I'll get the chance to be up there directing. And I was like, it'll happen.
You're a sophomore.
I know.
And you got to direct the entire show.
Yeah. And I was just, it was something that like, I was like, you know, just maybe it'll happen one day. And then finally, I expressed my interest in directing once I realized that's what I want to do in TV to Julius, the director at the time.
Right.
And I didn't expect anything to happen. And the one day he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, man, I really like what you do. I'm graduating. I would like you to step in as director." And here I am.
But you were also, did you also work the board, the switchboard at one point in your freshman year? Or am I
did for other shows, but not for Smash.
And was that with Julius?
No. It was strictly It was strictly for Smash.
But you knew, he knew that you'd done that.
He knew that I'd done that, and directing is more about knowing the shots, and I think that he saw something in me because we would frequently have conversation. Like, I would pull him aside and be like, "Hey, is it okay if I do this with my camera, or I feel like this shot will work if I do this."
Well, right, so since it's a live sketch comedy show, and you're going in and out of live skits and then digitals,
right?
It's really different type of directing from what people, I think of a director.
Yeah, that's a conversation that I have with a lot of people, both at my previous internship and wherever I go, because I'm either in my endeavor since, like, you know, I'm both film and, you know, television. Yeah. When I'm with television people, I describe to them, like, some of the film stuff. And then with the film people, I'm like, I describe them TV stuff. So, like, the director, in film is, you know, the creative person. So that's like the person who's in charge of, as you know, putting, you know, directing actors and putting the script in action.
Yeah, most of the time.
Yes, most of the time. And in television, the director is more close to the director of photography in film, where they're in charge of the visuals.
Right.
So the director in TV, as you know, is in charge of, you know, making the show visually look good.
But also has the live component.
Exactly.
Like, let's switch to this shot.
Exactly.
Live editing.
You're live editing. You're doing a lot of pre-production with your, at least for me, with my camera operators and with the writers to put their visions into action and to make sure that the show overall flows well. And that's something that we're going to improve on for next semester. Yeah. And we've had several meetings about like all the great stuff we're going to do.
It's a technically complicated feat.
Exactly.
To direct a live show.
But it's exciting at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very exciting and like...
And as a sophomore, that's got to be like a huge ego boost.
No.
A huge like achievement, I think. And to the point where I remember before you were doing that, your freshman year, you were just talking about like... So you're a film major.
Mm-hmm.
And then are you also with communications or is it strictly film and media arts?
So my primary major is media studies and production, which is with Klein College
and
Community Communication. And then my secondary is film.
But it's a major.
As a major,
so you're double major.
Film has
super
more
impressive again.
Well, yeah. Well, I was lucky enough to find early on, and a lot of people. I kind of was doing like some research when I first started and was like talking to people like, hey, what does this program offer? What does this program offer? And it sounds like Klein teaches you a lot about TV, which I want to learn about, but they don't go as in depth as film does about directing and cinematography. Oh,
fascinating.
So like, and then also I think I've made more connections in film school too. But at the same time, you know, I'm in a, you know, Klein College is still very valuable to me.
Oh no, for sure. So, I mean, and would you agree with the assessment that maybe documentary is your favorite type of filmmaking?
I would say so. Absolutely.
Because we helped, I helped you make that education documentary.
Yes,
last year,
which I'm still grateful for.
Which was so much fun to make.
That was, you know, looking back at
Talk about what it was.
Yeah, okay. So.
This was education.
The very broad name of education. Yeah.
Great title.
Yes.
But it was about Betsy DeVos.
It was about Betsy DeVos, however you say her last name. I was kind of like outraged by her. Like once I saw her Senate hearing, I was pretty outraged by that, and I was like, I want to make a video about this. And then I just thought of like, what if I juxtaposed her Senate hearing with like some interviews of people who were actually affected by education.
Hands-on. People
who are dealing with it, in various different
perspectives.
Fields.
Yeah,
perspectives. Good word for that.
Good assistant director.
Good.
Because I was AD, but you had such a good crew on that. So you had Quinn. Doing gaffing.
Oh my gosh, the fact that she helped me with that, like I look back and I cringe. I'm like,
Quinn Lay.
I was like, why did she help me do that? Like she does amazing things. She's like the best human being on the planet, and she like took the time, and I could tell she was like exhausted
too.
She is
the best.
And she took the time to like drive over and help me unload, and then also help me film.
Was Norm
film
there?
And light. Norm was there for the teacher at Mead School. He helped me shoot that.
So who were the? I remember, but I'm just going to let you say it. Who were the interviews you got for this film? Because you were showing footage of the Senate hearing with Betsy DeVos.
Right.
And then you were, like you said, juxtaposing it with interviews with talking heads of actual people in the field of education from Philadelphia.
Right. So my first thing was, you know, obviously a teacher. And I volunteer at Mead School on 18th and I believe Oxford.
Yeah.
And
we don't need to tell their location.
I volunteer there, and then I was able to meet the teacher, and I forget his last name, but I was able to talk to him and say, hey, I'm doing this documentary. Got him. He said he had a lot of good things to say, so I was like, we'll set up an interview. And then I was also looking for a college student who is affected by, you know, the costs of education, you know, specifically college education.
Right, right.
And so we found you. Oh, yeah, you helped me find him. You were actually the one who was like,
Tim
"Hey,
Tui, yeah.
I have my friend Tim Tui, and you know, he unfortunately had some problems with finances, and maybe we can talk to him about it." And then also, I wanted to talk to like a person who is an expert on education. So I actually had this professor, political science professor, who specifically studies education and like. All the issues that come with that.
Right. And it was a Temple professor. What was astonishing for me on that, well, first of all, this was like your first documentary, wouldn't you say? Like your first...
At Temple?
Yeah. Oh, you'd done other stuff.
Yeah, I
did
some
of school.
Stuff.
But education was... And this was for one of your classes, right?
It started out as a personal project, and then once I realized it was kind of carrying over, I was like, I'll do this for my final.
Well, what was so cool about that I noticed immediately, and I did like a really out there documentary freshman year about trying to find a hamper, but it was so cool to learn about the documentary making process and how it can be so different from whatever type of documentary you may work on in the future. Whereas maybe like a feature film that's a narrative, you can kind of, there's a similar setup and pre-production, post-production order, whereas documentary... You're kind of just, you're going with the flow. You don't know exactly what the end product's going to be until you finish it. But one thing that was just cool was with your style of documentary filmmaking, it wasn't so much like a Michael Moore documentary where he has a very clear, like, this is what he's trying to say about a certain political topic. Because this, I mean, it's education. It shouldn't be that political, but it was very political with getting Betsy DeVoe involved. Because, I mean, I think we both felt like she was, and a lot of people felt she was very underqualified. But in your movie, even though that's what you were trying to say, it didn't come off garish,
mm-hmm.
or just over the top. It felt you literally relied on the perspectives of the people you interviewed to get some of what you were trying to say across. But then you also learned about what the whole election for her meant. Like, what does this mean to the education system and department in the United States?
Yeah, I wanted to make it. I knew, and I think we talked about this. Like, I wanted to not make it so political because I didn't want it to be discredited. But I personally felt going into it that, you know, the issue with Betsy DeVos serving as our education secretary is that, you know, I feel like it's a bipartisan issue. I feel like she's just not qualified. It's not Democrat or Republican. And the way that she behaved during that Senate hearing was just like, I was so appalled by it that I wanted to do something about it.
Which is so cool.
Yeah. And again, like what I was first saying with it was like, obviously, like, we all look back at our personal projects and we kind of cringe a little bit.
Yeah,
and
I
look at it and I'm like, I should have done this, I should have done that.
Oh, totally. But learn so much from
absolutely.
It.
And like, in return, like, you know, I've definitely been busy the past year, but I have a lot of documentaries that I want to produce in the next year, and I would definitely love to work with you on that.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. And that was just another cool... It was another way that you get to meet people you work on the set with. Like, that's, you probably got a lot closer with Quinn. I know we definitely formed like a tighter bond after
that. Oh, absolutely.
Like, you meet so many more people every time you make a film like that because you rely on a lot of people for help. But it was really interesting and a lot of fun to make. And we just, it was a great sense of passion behind it. I think like whenever you make something, when the people helping out all have as much passion as the director, it doesn't seem like a chore,
right?
Which unfortunately, like, sometimes working on whoever's set, it might feel like a chore because
feel that way. And looking back in hindsight, I definitely, you know, it's good to know that I have, like, especially at Temple, you know, talking about film, you know, Temple is like the epitome of like collaboration. I feel like with film, like, so many people are, the fact that so many people were willing to help me with that as a freshman was like crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
It's so nuts, and it's good to know that in the future I'll have that support. But with other projects that I work on, I hope to have more smaller crews for them.
Yeah.
And not have too many people involved. Yeah. Yeah.
And you got some really good. I thought. What was really astonishing also was like the questions you asked. You could tell you really thought them through,
mm-hmm.
and like you took a lot of notes beforehand. Like, as whatever you know you might see when you look back on it and like critique it, obviously, but it was really astonishing for me because I was like, oh my god, this guy is pretty prepared. Like, he's really taking this seriously. But so I mean, you did that last year or 2 years ago now, and then two school years.
Oh my god.
And then you directed Temple Smash last fall. And then this past semester, you could have directed Temple Smash again.
Yeah.
But you didn't.
I didn't. Well.
Not like that. No,
that's a whole nother story.
You had another pick.
I am, just to preface it, I am still directing
But you took,
Smash.
I took
a semester off, which you advised me. I would have done it anyway, but you helped me realize, that I needed to do that because I love to just give myself way too much work.
Right. You want to overwhelm yourself.
Yeah.
Well, everyone in the film and media department does that. Even theater.
You don't think about it. You're just like, it was so important to me. And I was like, I was at like in my prime. Like, I was like, oh man, I can't wait. I can't
don't say you peaked there, John.
No, I'm saying that the momentum was going because I had so much fun my fall semester, and I was like, in my mind, I was like, man, I can't wait till spring. And then,
but then you applied somewhere,
and then I applied somewhere that I did not think I was going to get, and I got it. And then reality set in, and then we talked about
your internship.
Exactly.
So, okay, in the fall, I interned in New York with Dr. Oz, the Dr. Oz show, and it was so cool. Now, I've never really been a huge reality, or not even reality, daytime talk show TV guy. I love Ellen, but I mean, I watch Ellen if it's on. I know, because we're at school. That's not for us. Daytime TV is not for students. It is a different target audience. But they have a lot of opportunities for internships for people in college. And also, it's very professional productions. And I applied, and when I got Dr. Oz, I just did the whole internship for a semester, learned about New York. I gained such a huge respect for it, and because you realize how much work goes in. So you got a very similar internship.
We both worked for daytime talk shows that only old people watch. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but you were with Harry Connick Jr.
Yeah, Harry Connick Jr. That was, and you when we met. So like, just to like tell your audience, like, so what had happened was once I found out that I had got the internship, yeah. Like I said, reality set in. It was something I thought wasn't going to happen, and then it happened, and I was like, I need to make this work immediately. And luckily, I had my good friend Ryan over here, who I had talked. We had had like a few meetings during his internship, and like got lunch a few times and talked about his experience. And I was like, now I need to, you know, hit him up and ask him like how he did it. Like I need to know everything. I need to know what I need to do. There's so much that goes into it.
Logistically,
you know, in terms of like class schedules, extracurriculars, and then most importantly, like living situation, traveling. Totally. I was like, I have a lot to figure out, and you were able to point me in the right direction and help me, you know, have a smooth semester.
I made the mistakes for you.
So yeah, that, right.
And a lot of other people, because a bunch of my other friends, not talk shows, but they got internships in New York. And the way I look at it is once you know the transportation, like once
that's
you
the
understand,
hardest part. That's totally, the hardest part.
Absolutely the hardest part. And that's New York in a nutshell. It's just how you get around.
I'm grateful. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm grateful for it. It was very, you know, it was rewarding. So like at times the transportation, you know, I didn't really think about it because I was excited to get to work. But once it started to drag out, I started to feel the struggle. But like, I'm grateful that now I am like, I was never good at public transportation. I never was like,
even
Philly. Like,
okay.
Like, so being like, the fact that I had to take a bus to New York and then figure out how to take
the subway.
Two trains back,
the
subway in New York. Once I came back to Philly, I'm like, because I used to be confused by our subway system. I'm like, dude, this is so easy.
Is so easy.
How do people not take the subway all the time? And why don't we have more trains? We need more trains.
I know, right? we have two trains and I think like a trolley,
yeah,
which no one uses. But it's so, once you get it though.
Once you get it,
it's
just
so, something you don't need to think about.
And then it's unfortunate how quickly, once you spend a lot of time in New York, you turn into a New Yorker. Like,
yeah.
I started to like get that, like, because
my personality changed.
Exactly, me too. Once I started, you know, I've always been just like kind of like, oh, excuse me, sorry, you know, let me, I'm sorry.
Laid back a
and
little.
And then laid back, and then.
But now I'm antsy.
Now I'm just like, get out of my way. I'm going to my train. Move.
There's certain things I am not. I'm impatient on, and then there's a lot of other things I'm way more patient on.
Right. Right.
It's a lopsided. My personality totally changed. And I think
me too.
Even people realize that in the spring semester when you were experiencing it. But I definitely feel like you're just always moving. It's exhausting and you don't realize it.
Oh my gosh. That sums it up totally. Just like, and you had told me this about your experience when you were, before I got this internship.
And you had 3 days a week. Right?
Well, I had 3 days a week.
I only did 2 days a week.
So let's put it this way. I was on a mode of public transportation or a bus every day.
Every day.
Every day except Saturday.
Every day, man.
But you were telling me, and I didn't, you know, really think about it all that much, but you, before I had gotten the internship at Harry and we had lunch together, you were like, man, you know, once I'm done this internship, I'm going to appreciate I'm going to appreciate being at Temple and not having to commute so much. I'm going to appreciate life so much more. And once, like, I'm surprised that my brain didn't literally explode once I finished my internship, at how much time I had. I'm like, wait, shouldn't I be on a bus right now? Shouldn't I be on a train or something? Like, I shouldn't be just sitting here, because if I wasn't in class, if I wasn't in New York, I was on a bus or a train, and it was stressful.
So, okay, you said you only had Saturday off.
Really. Only Saturday, yeah.
So, and wouldn't you just take advantage of those that Saturday? Like, I remember the days off I had, which were just Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. I would be like a lot more relaxed. I would just be focused on school because during the week, I wasn't really focused on school.
But think about it, though. For me, Saturday was like a Sunday. So like I never got that. So I every single day I always had that feeling in the pit of my stomach. Like
it's coming up.
I would have friends over like my apartment for the weekend, and like I couldn't because like I would have fun like Saturday, and then like once I woke up on Sunday, I'm like, oh, I need to catch my bus. In 2 hours. Okay,
so at Harry, there is a really cool video I saw you put up. Well, first of all, let's just talk about your duties, because I don't think a lot of people know like what duties interns have at talk shows. Mm-hmm. We can both probably share on this, but
yeah,
let's focus on Harry for a second.
Right.
So what were the departments that you worked at? What was the setup? Like day one orientation, what did they describe? As much as you're allowed to say, if you're...
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, with other shows, as I was taught, like Fallon and a lot of the main shows that people actually watch,
right.
You know, you get assigned a department, and that is your department. If you're mm-hmm. audience, you work with audience every day.
Totally.
But for Harry, it was, I think it was 11 of us, and we were all just general production interns, which was great because it allowed us to work with every department.
Did he record 5 days a week or three?
Crap. He recorded every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, three days a week.
So you were there only on that Wednesday?
Yeah, which sucked. I was kind of butthurt about that. Like,
so only one day a week.
So I would really take advantage. So it was Wednesday, and I would really take advantage of my time there. And
right,
just backtracking a little bit.
Yeah,
like
sorry.
I wanted to say how like the commute there, it really added to like I was saying earlier, it made me want to work harder when I was there. I'm like, yo, if I'm taking a 3-hour
totally
bus trip and I'm staying overnight and I'm taking all this time, I'm gonna work my butt off. Like, I'm not just gonna sit there.
Yeah.
And like at the times where like, you know, spoiler alert, the show got canceled. So whenever I was like doing boring work, like just sitting in the office and
you're gonna talk to people.
I would talk to people. I would say, hey, what do you do? My name's John. I come from
Temple. Nothing to
yada,
lose.
Yada, yada, yada. I mean, nothing to lose. I'm like,
you're only losing time.
Yeah, I would go to my supervisor and say, what can I do? Give me a task. And they'd be like, we don't have anything for you. And I'd be like, okay, but at least they know I'm trying.
Of course.
Because you want to make...
You're hungry.
Yeah, you're hungry. You want to make your time valuable. But yeah, so us interns, we would work with... So general production, that included all the departments. We would either shadow in the control room. We would work in... with audience and do research. We would make like courtesy phone calls. We would work with celebrity and do celebrity like research.
Confirming ticket phone calls.
Exactly. Yeah. Like courtesy reminder, like, hey, my name's John, I'm calling from the Harry show. Just a reminder, your
exactly.
show. You have VIP tickets for tomorrow. And then there was the I think it was called production, which was green rooms.
Okay.
Which is like helping out with like celebrities. And of course we couldn't talk to them, but if they needed like a coffee or something, or if they needed to walk to hair and makeup.
Right.
So I got to meet some people through that. And then also art department, which is essentially just like going on runs. Yeah. Like crap.
New York.
Yeah, all around New York. Like the one time they were doing a segment, they were taping. And like I had worked for art department a few times, and they never gave me a task. But I was sitting in the office, and they called. They're like, "Yo, we're taping right now, and we realize we don't have a hairbrush. Go out and get one." So I sprinted in my like business casual attire.
Oh,
I'm
totally.
Like sweating. I ran like like 8 blocks to the nearest CVS, and the
8 blocks.
Yeah.
Oh, because Harry's down at like 70 or whatever.
Yeah, and I was. And I'm not going to point any fingers, but there was a little miscommunication between the head of the art department and someone else in what they needed.
Okay.
So I got the wrong thing, and I sprinted back, and I handed it to the art director. I was like, here's what you asked for. She's like, this isn't what I asked for.
Oh, no.
This is what I asked for. We're doing this segment in like 8 minutes. And I was like... This is where I get fired. I'm like panicking. I'm like, it's all my fault. So then I sprint even faster. I'm out of breath this time.
No taxi, John?
No taxi.
Come on, man.
I sprinted again, and I was able to make it back like a minute before the segment started. And
it was probably just to go like this to someone's hair.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was
it was Harry's. It was
probably
coif.
They probably didn't even use it. They probably didn't even use it.
Yeah, yeah. That I had a similar thing happen to me where what's her name? I think Nancy Grace. She was on the show.
I remember you told me about this.
She came on a bunch and she had just a terrible sore throat. She had something going on in her throat. And they wanted some of that Chloraseptic spray, mm-hmm. which was at CVS. And luckily for us, CVS is like a block and a half away from us.
Oh, lucky.
So but she was like about to go on. And even though it's not live, they still have a rigorous taping schedule. Oh, absolutely. So they're like, you need to go get Chloraseptic spray for Nancy Grace. And I go, all right. And I just run out. I'm looking all over CVS for it. I'm like asking people, I need Chloraseptic spray. Okay, hurry up. It's for Nancy Grace. And I go buy it, run back, and I hand it to her. And she's like, you're a lifesaver, darling. And then I walk away, and I was like, that was worth the 3-hour commute.
Isn't that funny, though, whenever you go on a run for someone famous, and then you just want to brag, but you
totally.
But you don't? Like, I don't want to brag, but you're just like,
yeah.
Man, I wonder if people know that I'm sprinting in the streets of New York to like get, you know, so-and-so this.
This is for
like,
Clinton Kelly. Yeah.
Like just, I had to like a few times like, and like there was a few occasions where I was like really nervous on runs. Cause like I was Harry's like go-to run guy.
Yeah.
Like, so like his assistant like knew I would, you know, get it done and be quick. So like they would.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
The one time, you know, he had like a signed jersey, like a sports jersey that was worth some money. And they put it in some like cheap like bag, and we're like, "Go get this framed." And I was like, "Okay,
framed,
yeah, get it like you know like in a glass case."
But
so like,
just go get it framed.
Yeah, so I like held it close to my chest, and I had
they
like,
told you where, right?
They told me okay. where, yeah. So I looked so weird because I had this like shopping bag and I was shielding it on my chest. I'm like, no one's snatching this from me.
Right.
And I went and I was like, yeah. And so I saw it in his on like one of the last weeks, I saw it hung up in his office. I was like, man, I did that. And I had to get his tap.
Taking it down.
I had to get his tap shoes one time.
Oh yeah.
Like he wanted, like he's like, you just wanted tap shoes. So like he made a custom order in like some place in Times Square and I picked that up for him and.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's so cool to go on runs. And I bet you did a lot more of those because you had 2 days of the week that weren't during a shooting day.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What was it? Mondays and Fridays were, you know, office days. We weren't in the studio. We were just in the office. So they would find stuff for us.
Did you ever have to drop like the taping at somewhere?
No, but I remember you were telling me about
that. Yeah,
I did that. I would be even more scared to do that than I would to drop Harry's jersey off. That's having a whole episode in your hands.
Yeah, you have the whole episode in your hands.
That is a day's work.
Bring it to the editor.
Yeah.
Because I think Oz, they still do, I think it's film. They still not recording like actual film, but they tape.
Isn't that crazy how like you think shows like that wouldn't do that, but then they still.
Yeah, I think just because it was pre-recorded for Oz, it made more sense. And I think the studio, not that it's old, but that I think like their setup, it was just more convenient mm-hmm. as opposed to. And I think they're transferring the file anyway. So they're like, let's just do tape.
Right.
But I mean, like my current internship with the Chew, that one's video and just like Harry and all that. But so you had all those experiences, and you told me this story, but I'm going to have you tell it again. But you had a day where you were in the elevator, and you had a massive surprise from a celebrity.
Yes.
I'll
never hear the end of this. I'll never hear the end
of it. Because the video is on Facebook.
Yeah, it's on Facebook, and my girlfriend and her, you know, brother-in-laws and everyone, they do not let me hear the end of it. And
in a battle? You can brag about this.
Oh, well, I can brag
about
it.
You look
kind of
silly in it.
I do. And thank you for being honest, because a lot of people are like, you don't look that bad. I'm like, just tell me. So every time someone would comment it, like.
But it's so cool, it doesn't
it's
matter.
Cool. Okay, so let me just tell the story. So first of all, I wasn't surprised. It was, spoiler alert, television is fake. Nothing is real. So they set it up. They set the segment up where like they have this thing called Elevator Jam. So it's like Harry's a musician. So they set up this thing. They're like, all right, so we're going to put a bunch of GoPros in an elevator and have Harry and his like musical guest in the elevator, and people are going to walk in unexpectedly.
Right.
And you know, they're going to serenade them, like sing a silly song or whatever. And half of them were real. Like, they're just like, some people didn't know.
But did you know?
But I knew. But they want to guarantee they have some people.
You knew that was
people.
A segment.
Yes. Oh, well, they sent out an email. They're like, you know, we're doing the Elevator Jam. We've done it like a million. They've done it like a dozen or so times, and they're like, all right, who hasn't been on it? The new interns. So they're like, all right, let's get the interns on it. So they had us wait in the lobby, and we would take turns going in. And, you know, like I said, that would guarantee that they had some people who would probably be good and who would sign the waivers, whereas, like, the other people who were surprised weren't guaranteed to sign the waiver or be good. Oh, my God. So I was the second to go in, and I
you knew what you were walking into,
I knew what I was walking into. I knew who the guest was and everything. But
it's almost worse.
So, yeah.
Because just when watching you, oh, he knows.
Yeah. And so, like, here's what happened. So in the video, what you see is it just obviously, you know, through editing, like, there's no issue. They're not going to show the whole segment. So it starts out with them singing, "We got an intern in the building. We got an intern."
Can you say the musical guest? It was Allo Black.
Yeah, Allo Black.
The man.
I need
the actual man. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And Harry Connick Jr. too. I mean,
and
he's
Harry
a big
Connick
deal.
Jr. right here.
So, you know, they were singing a song to me about intern in the building, and then they cut to me like attempting to give a high five, but of course I was like shaking, so like I missed the high five with Allo Black, didn't even acknowledge it, neither did he, and then I went to high five Harry, and he stopped. He's like, "Don't high five me while I'm playing," as a joke, not as,
as
like,
a joke
mean.
yeah.
And then,
which was funny,
and then it cuts to me missing my stop, and then they start singing about how I missed my stop, and then the segment just ends. So what had actually happened was, when I walked in, I know Harry. Harry knows me. Harry knows me by my first name.
John, wow.
Yes, he knows my face and everything. He knows I work for him.
We get it, you're friends. Like,
yes, we are friends. And I had to, and then he asked me, he's like, "Hello, what's your name and what do you do?" And I'm not going to say, "It's me, John, I work for you." So I was like, and I didn't want to say.
That would have rhymed, though.
I didn't want to say.
That would have been great for the song. My name is John and I work for you.
And I felt like they wouldn't use it if I said, "I'm an intern for, I work for you."
Oh, so you had to make it up?
Yeah, so I said, "I'm an intern in the building." And then that's how they're like, and then they didn't even start singing. I forget what happened before that, but they didn't start singing until right before my stop. So that's how that happened, was like they postponed it, and then they started singing, you know, "We got an intern in the building."
So you hit like a higher floor?
Right. And what I missed my stop because I didn't want to just walk out while they were singing, like they just started. So I was gonna be like peace out. So I look back, I was like, "All right, I'm gonna miss it," and the door closed, and then Al Black's like, "Did you miss your stop?" And I was like, "Yep, I missed my stop." And then they sang about that. And then the high five, they edited it so it looked like I did it, like, let me just give Al Black a high five. What happened was he asked me for it. He was like, "High five," and then I did it. So they made it look like I was just being a weirdo and trying to high five.
No, I didn't think that was that bad. It was a good little, you know, ending or post for that entire bit.
Yeah.
But,
and I'm not upset about it. I think it's funny.
You shouldn't be upset about it. You were in with the elevator with Al Black.
Right.
Yeah, that's way cooler than anything I experienced, because I don't have like a video of me, you know, talking to Dr. Oz or anyone in the elevator like that. But I was in the elevator with Stephen A. Smith, which is cool, and it was right before the Eagles. The Eagles were definitely going to the playoffs, and I was just like, "How about those Eagles?" And he's like, "We'll see, all right? Nothing's for sure. We'll see." And once you know
that's it, great.
They won.
Well, at least you got I think you got a picture, like a group picture with Dr. Oz.
Yeah, we did. Oh,
see,
right.
I didn't
we
get
did
anything
get
like that. That's the one thing I regret, is because, like, specifically because he knew who I was, like, I regret not, like, asking him for a picture, but I didn't want to get in trouble.
Right.
Like, you can, but he was super cool. Like, he was, and I want to put this on record that a lot of talent in, you know, the TV industry can be super fake, but in my experience, Harry is a genuine person.
Totally.
He would give the interns the time of day and ask us about our goals and, like, you know, about, like, you know, what we did, and he would ask us how we are, and he was a super nice guy, and I didn't get a picture with him, and the only proof of my interaction with him is that video.
Right.
So,
which is
something to look back on and laugh at.
Put it in the reel. But I think one thing that I think interning in New York made me realize is exactly what you said. Like, there's probably a lot of people who aren't down to earth, but I think if you are a host of a show, I'm actually now surprised if you're not down to earth, because I think you have to be a down to earth person.
You would think.
Obviously,
yeah.
You see tons of people every day, and you probably get sick of them sick of just talking to people, because that's what you do for a living once in a while. But I mean, I have not heard many experiences of hosts of shows that aren't down to earth like that. So I think that's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. You're saying that you think that a lot of the hosts are mostly
hosts down to specifically. Earth. I'm not talking like guests.
Yeah. Or yeah. The right, actors, right. Right.
Yeah.
Stuff well, like. there are a few people in specifically talk shows that I've heard some dirt. Well, on.
We don't need to talk about.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, we won't talk but, about them. But
talk about the pressure. Like I remember when I got Dr. Oz, I was super excited,
mm-hmm.
and I think I was way more nervous for just New York mm-hmm. than I was for being on the professional show because of stuff like. I mean, and this doesn't, I'm not comparing Temple Smash
mm-hmm.
to a professional talk show like Dr. Oz or Harry, but
right.
that type of experience and stuff I learned at Temple,
mm-hmm.
I think prepared me just be like, okay, yeah, I'm interning here.
Right.
I deserve to be here. I made it here.
It helps, man.
But I'm nervous about New York. Did you, I did find I had some pressure or I got a little nervous when I had to go on a run, like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
or when I was given like, a task that felt very timely and very important.
Ooh, yeah. Uh-huh.
But once you complete it, you just have a whole new, like, you're just so confident afterwards. Did anything yeah. like that happen for you? And you said the jersey, but was there any other type of task?
Yeah, like the hairbrush thing was probably the worst experience I had. I didn't get in trouble. In fact, like, they were happy I brought it on time, but I was, you know, that was the first time I felt the pressure.
Right. Which is so, it's so complicated to express that.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people who maybe, and I'm not, you know, throwing shade at like other businesses or even industries, but like mm-hmm. if you're an intern at like a business, you yeah. definitely, you're going to have some, I think you can compare that to the type of internship we had.
Cause right.
we're in an office.
Like exactly. you are in an office. We're office employees. We're
exactly.
Yeah.
It's just like any other office. So the pressure of, you know, trying to fit in or right. like also just not piss anyone off mm-hmm. is there.
Yeah.
But it's also on like an entertainment level of yeah. like, oh, people would kill to be at this office. Like uh-huh. this is what people
you think about it. Cause at. You go, yeah, exactly. You just, you definitely feel the pressure and like, it feels weird being an intern. Cause like of all the stereotypes that come with that. And like, once you're an intern specifically in an office, you're just like, this right. feels weird. Like I saw this in like movies and stuff. And
yeah.
Like now I'm that bottom of the barrel position, but you realize that people are a lot nicer. Like at Harry, people were very nice. And also like I never truly felt like I was unappreciated or, and I never really felt that intense pressure where I feel like if I, you know, find myself at like Fallon or something in the future, I will definitely probably experience that, you know, like,
right.
That's going to be a big change.
One of my friends interned at Fallon this semester. And I mean, she was like my best friend from Dr. Oz.
Right.
She just talked about how awesome it was, but also like day one, they sat her down and I think the other 20 or so interns and said, look, like, you know, 20,000 people applied for this.
Oh,
we interviewed
gosh.
200 and we picked you 20. Like, just to put it in perspective.
So, like, in other words, like, you better do good.
Like, you had a 1 in 10,000 shot of being yeah. picked here, and you're really replaceable. Which is, like, when someone opens like that, you're just like, okay, I can't mess up.
Yeah.
I don't want to piss anyone off. And that the pressure is on. Like, we had something similar to that at my orientation, but it wasn't like, we're not going to give you the numbers and just make it clear, like, this is... You're so replaceable. It's not even funny. Like,
yeah.
We can
at Harry, they should have sat us down and been like, listen, there were zero people who applied to this. You guys, you know, don't have to be here. You can leave at any time.
Well, so I...
No.
Were you there? I guess... we'll try to, like, be careful here. But when it got canceled,
mm-hmm.
Were you in the studio or were you anywhere near the office when it happened? Did you just hear about it? Or was everyone thinking about it? Going, it's a new show.
We've
been on for like a year, right?
Yeah. And you and I were kind of talking about this via text about how you, or I forget if we were talking about it in person or through text, but you were telling me how like you basically got to see the shock.
Yeah.
I never saw that because everyone kind of knew it was happening.
Right.
It was going to happen rather.
So everyone knew.
People were surprised it got picked up for a second season.
Really?
Which,
okay.
Yeah.
So they all felt lucky to be there. That was the vibe.
Well, not really. People were just like, oh, okay, it got picked up for another season. I guess I have a job. People knew, like, once the deadline was coming, everyone was like, yeah, it's going to get canceled. In fact,
right.
some people were already jumping ship. And
was that because of the ratings?
It's unfortunate because yes, it was it was a ratings thing.
Yeah.
So the show, I personally, although like I didn't like some of the segments, I thought, you know, I got to talk to the EPs who also worked on Letterman, which was awesome. And they were kind of telling me the intentions that they had and that Harry had. And they wanted to create a show that spoke, that highlighted important people like the underdogs and people yeah. owning nonprofits and doing amazing things, while also creating a fun environment without politics and appreciating women. Like Harry was telling me that he would always talk about how like he, you know, he loved his wife and he had a great mother and he would really love to highlight the importance of women in this society. And how that relates to that is it's unfortunate that it got canceled and that shows like Fallon and name any other, you know, late night talk show or talk show, they all overshadow that because they have A-listers that Harry didn't have, and they had
the more better writers, and, the better guests.
Exactly. And
more staff.
And it was popular. Apparently, I heard it was a big hit in the South because Harry is from the South and with like older women.
Right. Well, in a way, it was almost like he was, okay, this is not a fair comparison, but it's similar to Ellen. Yeah. With like, oh, this is one person, mm-hmm. and they're famous for their own thing,
right?
But also like they want to do the nonprofits, they want to like highlight underdogs, that's
right?
Similar to like kind of what Ellen does, but she's huge.
Well, yeah, but the thing is she brings in like, I don't know about underdogs, but
more
like
money.
She brings it, yeah,
yeah.
Well, and like she has the ability to get, she's established enough to get A-listers where Harry wasn't, and it's very unfortunate because Harry had everything that a talk show host needed. He was able to like be entertaining on his own without a co-host. He was able to have that charm of like an, you know, like a, I'm not going to say, but
yeah,
he was like an attractive and charming guy who has an established career, but they didn't gain enough momentum to be able to attract guests that would bring in more viewers. And it was very unfortunate that happened,
but
you know, Harry's doing good for himself now. I think he's on Broadway and, you know, it was a good publicity thing for him, for sure. I think he's happy to be, like, moving on.
Right. And 2 weeks ago, I mean, I'm an intern at the Chew right now, and which is awesome. I'm so lucky to have gotten that as well after Dr. Oz. Like, I just feel, like, incredibly fortunate. And that was an incredible experience because, I mean, there's three hosts. It's cooking. It's, like, it's a pretty different type of show from Dr. Oz. So that I was excited to experience that. And it's also been on for 7 seasons.
Yeah, and like I remember watching it as, you know, with my mom a few years ago, and I have strict memories of that show, and I enjoyed it.
It's
a unique show, and I thought it was very well established. I had no idea it would.
I don't think anyone knew. That was the thing. Like when I found out, I mean, and this is public knowledge. Like,
so
I'm
this
not,
is
like,
out.
Scooping
yeah.
anything,
okay.
But like when they. When I found out, like, everyone in the office found out, and one of the producers, and I just read this online, too, like, it's strictly, they wanted to make Good Morning America an hour longer, and it's cheaper to make a show that's in a studio an hour longer, just keep filming in that studio, you know, maybe bring in a few other people to host that extra hour, as opposed to funding another show. That totally makes sense.
It does financial
sense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a really established show. So it was, what the thing is, in comparison to when like Harry was not renewed, the people and like just seeing the vibe of the office and the reaction, I will never forget it.
That's
like,
a shame, man.
Because it was just a shock for everyone. And I'm an intern there. So I'm like, okay, my internship's ending the same time.
Yeah.
But still, like, just to witness it, it was such a bummer.
Because I'm assuming, like, a lot of people who work there have been there for a while.
Yeah.
Probably since the beginning, and it's a shame because, you know, they all got to find new jobs.
And it's almost blindsided. But it kind of goes into, like, this industry. Nothing's permanent, man.
Nothing's permanent, and it's all about money, unfortunately.
Yeah, everything's
about
money.
Like, talk about, like, I'm taking a summer course right now, and we were talking about, like, the whole Roseanne controversy.
Right.
Controversy and how... just because of one person's stupid
actions.
I'm not even going to call it a mistake. Yeah, that's a good word. Action. You know, hundreds of people lost their jobs. Maybe 200 or something. 200 or 300 or something.
And think of the cast too, and the crew, the writers. We know the skill. Like, there's so many people.
We were talking about this again in my class. How they're actually trying to get them their jobs back. They're trying to renew the show,
right,
but with a new premise. Like, I've never watched Roseanne in my life. They want to have like the daughter who is the producer and like co-star. Be the new star of the show and focus it around her. But statistically,
it's her.
Statistically, people say like when like similar attempts of like renewing a show with a new premise, they never usually work.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, television, the show's called Roseanne. Yeah. It's her. Like,
it's all about her. Yeah,
and it's just so unfortunate. I'd never watched it. I don't know if there was like a standout or anything like that, or if they could do, you know, something. I have no idea, but it's so weird to see. Well, one thing that I think that was shocking for most people was just like, I think for the past year, maybe year and a half, just you hear so much stuff from people and there's never any consequences. And it was really interesting to see like a line
was drawn. Yeah. Absolutely.
Within an hour.
The president, I think, what was it? The president of Disney, or
Bob Iger.
Yeah.
Was it Bob Iger?
Yeah. They made that decision like on the spot. Like they had to get, the tweet was sent out, the controversy started. They all had to get into a room and say, okay, we're going to leave this room and we're either going to get backlash from the show still being on, or we're going to lose millions of dollars and cancel the show.
And that's a fall slot. Like that is their big fall show.
Yeah.
And now you have they're like, we're going to cancel this.
They lost money on that.
Knowing we have a 30-minute slot now that's open for the fall.
Uh-huh.
They got 3 months now to figure out what they're going to put in place of that.
Right.
And this is their prime time slot. This is the number one show of the spring and only had like 7 episodes.
Yeah. Well, they're saying...
what a decision.
Yeah, there's like a demand for like...
What a financial decision. Yeah.
Yeah, there's like a demand for shows like that where like... Because like who's really watching television today? It's mostly like, you know, older conservative people. And now they... they need to... I wouldn't be surprised if they came up with another similar concept. I know, what's his name?
Shows like that.
Yeah, we were talking about how... what's that one guy's name? Home Improvement.
Oh, Tim Allen.
He has like a talk show on right now that is like getting rebooted. That has a similar concept where it's like it appeals to the conservative audience. And like now I feel like there's going to be more traction with
that. Who knows? But it's just... It was interesting to see... something like that happen, just because I feel like we shouldn't be surprised that it happened like that. But for some reason I was shocked. I was like, oh my God,
television,
they did that.
Television and freelancing in general is just, it's a brutal industry, man.
Totally.
Brutal.
Totally. But, I mean, you know, people are in a union in case stuff like that happens. Mm-hmm. Like, and even if certain crew people get fired, or if you have to leave, or if you have an injury, that's the whole reason why you're in a union. However, like, you know, cast members, writers, and there's so many other roles where they have to figure out something else to do. Like, I mean, there's just people, you really got to have a backup plan. You really got to keep in touch with your contacts and just make sure you have some doors open just in case, like, you're checking in on people. I think I just want to move away from that now. So right now you're interning with the Phillies.
I'm working. It's actually I'm lucky enough to like, you know, not be interning. I'm actually, you know, working for them and doing. It's a part time thing. It's not a full time thing. Like I'm not at the Philly Stadium every day.
How many days a week?
It depends. So like with baseball, there's home stands and away stands.
Of course.
So like it's kind of like 50-50. But like when they have a home stand, like maybe 2 days a week.
Okay.
So like maybe I'll work like 4 days every 2 weeks. But it's
a good deal.
It's exactly, and it's a foot in the door. It's good experience. It's a great organization.
And you're with the Phillies.
And I've loved the Phillies my entire life.
God.
My family always took me to games, and the fact that I'm able to like work behind the scenes in that production process is like mind blowing. And like, it's such a great experience, and I love it. I love it a lot.
That's so cool. When you told me that, I was jaw dropping. Now I think we've gotten a good sense of what you've done, what you've done with your life so far. Maybe like one other thing I wanted to touch on. I don't even think we talked about this beforehand, but oh my goodness. So you're a huge Beatles guy.
Absolutely.
Gigantic, right?
Yes.
Andre Gardner, 102.9. Oh, do you got to take that?
No, I'm good.
You sure?
Yeah.
All right.
Who it is. Solicitor.
You sure? Oh, solicitor. Yeah, okay. I thought you were checking it a few
times.
No,
it's an unidentified number. They call me all the time.
I hate getting the number that's like close to my number.
You're calling about your PICO bill and how you...
You want to save money on car insurance.
Like, yeah.
I don't... But I get one that's literally just one number away from my number.
That's what they do. They purchase, like, they think it's like a psychological thing where they try to get a number similar to yours so you're more likely to pick it up. But now every time, because my number starts with 267-401, now that is the number that always calls me, and I'm like, it's a scam.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah.
Or it's someone in your area.
Do you ever get the one where I get this one a lot where you answer the phone, and then you're like, hello? And all I hear is, Marriott Hotels. Like, yada, yada, yada.
I've gotten that one. I've also get Heather from Account Services. Do you get her? She literally opens every time. She says, this is Heather from Account Services. And it's totally a recording.
Yeah.
I want to tweet at Heather.
Exactly.
Account Services and just hate on her.
Marriott Hotels.
But you... back to the Beatles. You're a huge Beatles guy. So is my roommate, Jake. But you won something from a 102.9 show with Andre Gardner, right?
Oh, my God. That was a great experience. A year and a half ago.
Oh my God. For some reason, I thought it was November.
Dude, that was like...
It was a year and a half ago. It was before education. It was before we did the doc.
It was before we did it, yeah.
So what was it again? You won a vinyl?
It was... Oh my gosh. So it was a vinyl. It was like a rare Beatles vinyl off of like... So it's called the Butcher cover, which is basically like, I don't want to get all Beatles nerd here, but like they released, you know, in like America, for every like one album the Beatles release in England, America would make them release like three in America and just reuse songs to get more money. So the Beatles were so fed up with how many album covers they had to shoot. John Lennon was like, let's make a really, you know, just like out there image, like cover photo. So they dressed up in like, I don't know what you call it, but like the white, like doctor's uniforms, like dressed up like a butcher.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it's called the Butcher cover, because they have like a bunch of like raw meat all over them and like dismembered baby dolls. And people were so appalled by it that they pulled it off the shelves like the first day. So, and then what they did was they plastered a new cover over it. They didn't, rather than making new ones, they just put them back in the shop and made a new one. So, like, you can either get, like, the most rare one is, like, if you have one that was originally on the shelf, but, and then there's also one where it's, like, you have the Butcher cover, but the other one was peeled off. So, they're usually not in good condition, but Andre Gardner, who hosts 102.9.
Preserved one, right?
He owned it, and then he had a professional, like, glue remover, take off the cover and make it look like it was like a First State butcher cover. And that's what had attracted me to the event was like, they're like, all right, we're going to do some giveaways, including the Butcher cover. And I was like, oh, cool. It's in Newtown. It's near me. It's a nice brunch. I'll take my girlfriend out.
Yeah.
And we did, they went around with the raffle and they gave out, you know, they first pulled the name out and they gave out like a DVD and then like a box set of something, and they're like, all right, and the grand prize goes to, and then they called my name.
Newman.
Right. And then I was just like, oh my gosh. And everyone was like clapping, and I got to get a picture with Andre Gardner, and I couldn't believe it. I wonder how much that's worth.
It's probably worth a lot, man.
I don't know. I want to go to Pawn Stars or something and get it appraised, because it doesn't have the actual vinyl in it. It's just the cover.
Right.
But what I can do is I'm thinking of buying the it's called Yesterday and Today. Buying it and then taking that vinyl and putting it in mine. I have it framed and I have it put in like a plastic case and then a frame on top of it. And I have clue what it's worth, but like it goes anywhere from like $700 to like $4,000.
If you're ever in trouble. So we're gonna end this. We're gonna end this with a little segment called Two for the Road.
Okay.
Where it's 2 minutes of rapid fire questions. Now, they're actually, I should have unlimited in case you are so quick that we surpass before the 2 minute part. But no, we only have 30. So I'm going to just ask you these, just rattle them off. You're going to try to answer as many as you possibly can. And this will just get more insight into the mind of John Newman. Hello, Newman. All right. So
never heard that one before.
And again, and I also like to preface this with like, some people think these questions are like all time. Okay. It's in stone.
Okay.
This is just, June 11th, setting the date, 2018. Okay. This is how you feel at this moment in time. It totally can change in like 5 minutes if you want.
Okay.
But right now. All right. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Okay. Here we go. Starting now. Do you make your bed every day?
Yes.
Do you take vitamins every day?
Yes.
Wow. Tap water or bottle water?
Tap.
Michael Jackson or Prince?
Michael Jackson.
Nice. Do you ever have a teenage rebel phase?
I had a rap phase.
A rap phase? Yes. Okay. Cheetos or Doritos?
Doritos.
Drink with any dead person, who would it be?
Any dead person? Oh, shit. I was going to say...
Not a Beatle?
I was going to say Paul McCartney, but he's still alive. George Washington.
Wow. Not even George. Okay. Never mind. Eat meat with any dead person, who would it be?
I don't eat meat.
Oh, that's right. Well done. So you just wouldn't do it to be with like...
Nope.
George. Okay. What Ferris Bueller character are you?
Ferris Bueller.
Nice. Favorite SNL cast member?
Oh my gosh. All time?
Just go for it. No, now. June 11th.
Kyle Mooney.
Okay. Star Trek or Star Wars?
Star Wars.
Mariah Carey or Madonna?
Madonna.
Best fast food French fries?
McDonald's.
How often do you call your parents?
Every 2 days.
Do you wash your hands after the bathroom every time?
Yes.
Ocean or lake?
Ocean.
Did you ever have a stuffed animal growing up?
Webkins.
Nice. When you need to blow off some steam, what do you do?
I listen to music and I dance.
Favorite Office character?
Michael Scott.
Favorite album of this year so far?
Favorite album? Oh, yay.
Out of date. It says 20. Okay, yeah, nice. Favorite movie of the year so far?
Favorite movie of the year? It was last year, but Florida Project.
Nice. Moonlight or La La Land?
Moonlight.
Rocky or Rambo?
Rocky.
New York or LA?
New York.
Fuckman State? Anyway, was Hillary Duff a Duff in high school?
Yes.
Okay, if you had a TV show, what would you call it?
Newman.
Nice. Favorite convenience store?
Walgreens.
25 seconds. Serena Williams or Robin Williams?
Robin.
Delivery or DiGiorno?
DiGiorno.
Sexier accent, Aussie or British?
Aussie.
NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
Backstreet Boys.
Do you go out of your way to recycle?
Yes.
Indiana Jones or Han Solo?
Han Solo.
Ever sneezed on someone by accident?
All the time.
Wow. Greatest U.S.
Snot too.
Nice. Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Last question. When in the car, radio or own music?
Dude, own music. Who listens to the radio?
Wow. Okay. John Newman, everybody. Recently, I like to do my own music, but for some reason, there's something about listening to the radio, and when a song comes on that you know...
Oh my god! I was only kidding. I listen to the radio sometimes, but I would say 99.9%.
Oh yeah, I listen to my own music. I do that too.
I do CDs still too.
Oh yeah,
yeah, CDs.
Nice. I have the my car. I have a tape deck where
I can do the little aux wire.
Yeah, yeah, but there's a cool tape deck out now where it broadcasts a signal, so you can just go to a channel on your radio. And then it's Bluetooth with your phone.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really neat. But anyway, John, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find you? They can probably find you at the Philly Stadium.
They can find me at the Philly Stadium.
Do you want to plug anything?
At the Yard.
Like a Vimeo or a YouTube?
I'm currently in the process of building my production company, John Newman Productions. So facebook.com/John Newman Productions. Give it a like. That's what I'm up to.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, and I also want to say thank you. I think what you're doing with this podcast is really awesome.
Oh, thanks.
Kind of given, highlighting some people at Temple, and I think it's a good way to kind of grind and do your own thing and be productive. And I think you have the voice for radio, you're doing the right thing, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for coming on. Yeah, if I learned anything at Oz, they were saying just always do your own thing. So
absolutely.
Hopefully we'll have you on in the future.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.